Go for refuge to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the Assembly of Saints. For the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the Assembly of Saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha, benefit of all sentient beings.
May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness.
May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss of sorrows. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and unclean.
The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this, offering it as a Buddha realm, all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariva Ratna Mandala Buddha Mega Samunda Saparana Samaye.
Okay, Stephen requested that we have a pop quiz, and so in honor of Stephen's request. Oh, you didn't say that? Oh. Let's review the faults of the listener. Remember the cups we talked about one time? Who remembers any of their cups?
Well, I remember five, but you have three, so.
Well, you're more advanced than we are. Let's get three down. Anybody remember any of the three that we talked about?
Well, there's one that's upside down. And
okay, so what is that? The upside down cup.
I'm sorry?
What fault is that?
I think it's the fault of wrong view. I'm not sure.
Anybody agree or disagree?
I like that.
You like that? Okay.
Well, the physical part of it is that you can't put anything in it.
Yeah.
So what does that mean then?
It's totally non-receptive.
You're not listening.
You're not listening. You're distracted. You're thinking of what kind of pizza you're going to order. You're not there. Yeah. You're tired.
Totally.
You're bored. Ignorance, yeah?
Nothing going in
the cup, right? Okay. So that's one of the cups, the one that's upside down. Mm-hmm. Looks good, but it doesn't work very well.
The other one has a hole in it.
Okay, and what is that fault?
Goes in one ear and comes
out
the
other.
Yeah, you don't remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You're right.
And then?
Wrong view is contaminated.
You got a dirty cup, it's got dirt or poison or something in it. Those are your wrong views. And so what's the number one wrong view to have? Yeah, to be ignorant, which is self-cherishing, and basically just not getting what reality is about, you know. So that's kind of the general wrong view. But I thought just for fun I would elaborate that one tonight with a teaching that comes from Deshung Rinpoche, who was a famous Sakya Lama, who passed away and is now reincarnated, isn't it? Still came back. But he talked about this last one in more detail, the contaminated cup. And he listed six possible contaminations. This is for the listener, okay. So the first one was pride, and he described that as, well, I probably know as much as that Dharma teacher. And the second one is disrespect. Well, this teacher isn't qualified. The third one would be carelessness. Well, even if I don't understand, that's okay, because this isn't really that important. The fourth one is distraction, which is letting your mind wander. Okay. I guess that could be also the cracked cup, maybe. And then the fifth one was mental laxity, not exerting effort in your listening. Yeah, I guess you'd say not actively listening, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then the sixth one was resistance. Listening with an irritated or resistant mind. Mm-hmm. So that's a little elaboration from Deshung Rinpoche. Thank you, Rinpoche. Mm-hmm. Great teacher. Okay, so we're in our text. We're in the practice part of the text. And we're in the impure vision part of the text. And in general, what do we want to be developing when we're in the impure vision?
Letting go of what? Like renunciation.
Renunciation. Renunciation is kind of the general headline of this part of the text. But we go into some more specifics. We made a long journey through the lower realms and lost half the class. And then we went into the upper realms and a couple people came back. Right. And so all of that was sort of renunciation within renunciation, so to speak. And now we're going to do renunciation, which is the next subsection, to develop diligence. Okay? And it's about the difficulty of obtaining the prerequisites, what we normally call the precious human rebirth, which, as we've mentioned, has 18 prerequisites that you have to satisfy to say that you have that. And so this is the new section that we're going to be starting this evening, and I this is one of my favorite sections because we've sort of going into optimism here now. It's not all doom and gloom. There is hope. So if you've got a text, we're on page 55. Down there towards the bottom, it says instructions on the difficulty of obtaining the prerequisites to evoke diligence. Everybody find that okay? Yeah? So the first line says, one can understand that the saying in the root treatise. What is the root treatise? Who wrote the root treatise? Who is the first human lineage holder?
Guru Rinpoche?
No.
Avalokiteshvara?
Nope. Human. Nope. Go back to around 800. 300 years before, 400 years before Drapa Gyaltsen.
Oh, in the Tibetan tradition.
In the Lamdre tradition.
Is it on here? Is it this person? Or is that somebody else?
Nörtchen Khunchak Lundrup is the author of this text. Mm-hmm. He lived in the 1500s.
Okay.
The first human lineage holder was Virupa.
Mm-hmm.
Virupa, also known as Birwapa,
mm-hmm,
in Tibetan, I believe. He received it from who?
Naratmya.
The goddess Naratmya, who was an enlightened,
yeah,
female
who
Buddha.
Who scolded him for throwing his mallet down the toilet.
Yeah. Wrapped his knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he wrote the treatise, the root treatise. The full title is The Root Treatise of the Vajra Verses. And it's actually commonly referred to as the Vajra Verses. And that was the first written Lamdre text, Pecha text. Very short, very brief, very pithy, almost incomprehensible, without a guru to help you. So that's what's referred to here as the root treatise in the first line. Virupa's root treatise of the Vajra Verses. So it says, one can understand that the saying in the root treatise for sentient beings with afflictions is the impure vision. That's the quote. And then the text says, that indicates that the result of deeds motivated by the affliction is only the lower realms, rather than the difficult to obtain body of the higher realms. So we're going to talk about the difficult to obtain body tonight in this section, the precious human rebirth. Having realized the nature of worldly existence to be suffering, one must practice the holy teachings, which is the means of gaining liberation from it. So we just spent 50 pages talking about the suffering, and now we're going to find out how to get out of it. To practice the holy teaching, one must obtain an unimpaired human body endowed with the prerequisites, the famous 18 prerequisites. That body, along with the prerequisites, is not obtained again and again. What do you suppose that sentence means?
There's no guarantee that you're going to be reborn human.
Exactly.
It's a rare thing.
Just because you've arrived here doesn't mean you can't go down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as it was said in the Stem Array chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra, it is difficult also to obtain the opposite of the eight restless states. It's difficult also to obtain human life. It is difficult also to obtain the favorable conditions of leisure. It is difficult also for a Buddha to appear in the world. So we're going to find out what all that means here. First of all, the eight restless states will be described in a couple of pages, so we're going to leave it here for now and put a little bookmark there, but we will come back to that. We'll learn what that is. How about it's difficult to obtain the favorable conditions of leisure? What do you think that refers to?
Well, most people are not born into wealth. They're born into a class where they must work or scrounge to eat. And so it's all about survival. There are very few who have the privilege of not having to work to put food in their mouths.
Okay, everybody agree? Yeah, okay. And how about where it says, it's difficult also for a Buddha to appear in the world? I thought Buddhas could do whatever they want. Why would it be difficult?
I'd imagine the conditions need to be right.
Like what?
Difficulty for me, not for the Buddha.
Sorry?
Difficulty would be for me, not for the Buddha.
And what's your difficulty?
Not being in the right place at the right time.
Okay, that's one for sure. Mm-hmm. Not having the leisure is another one. What else?
Cannibals.
Yeah.
What was that?
What?
Cannibals.
Being born in a barbaric land.
Oh.
Yeah, there are some countries, some places where Buddhism is not exactly welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? Yeah.
Well, in order for the teacher to appear, the students must be ready.
And what does that mean? Ready in what sense?
They must be, I'll use the word psychologically ready, spiritually ready. They must want the teachings.
Is wanting it enough?
They must aspire to the teachings.
Is aspiring enough?
They must want to change.
What about the 18 prerequisites? Do you have to have that?
Yeah, and we're going to go through that in a minute. You also have to have the good karma,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I've wanted to do a lot of things spiritually. It didn't happen. If the karma wasn't there, and how did you create that karma?
From your good deeds in the previous lives.
Yeah, from your good deeds, from your merit. You did or didn't accumulate enough merit to get whatever it is that you wanted spiritually. And what we're going to find out here tonight is that just to be in this room and studying this text takes a huge amount of merit. So that means all of us in the past have been predisposed and also acted on it. It's not enough to want it, you also have to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to buy the lottery ticket before you win the lottery. Yeah. So this whole question about merit and conditions and leisure and all that stuff, this is sort of warming us up for the list of the 18 that we're going to go through here.
Just to pick up briefly on it, because it's so brilliant to say you've got to buy the lottery ticket, but you've also got to want the money for an auspicious purpose. Some people really hate money. They think it's the root of all evil, and we were just reading about money being
evil.
Well, some people just want it for themselves.
So the
leisure part of it, is that so that you're not distracted by having to toil and work to mm-hmm. feed yourself?
Which, unfortunately, a lot of people in this world have that condition, you know.
Okay.
Okay. And then Shanti Davis says, this opportunity of possessing the 18 prerequisites is extremely difficult to obtain. Having obtained this, one must accomplish the purpose of people. If benefit is not accomplished, it will be difficult to gain the opportunity in the future. So what do you think Shanti Deva means when he says accomplish the purpose of people?
Well, our relationships with other people are basically is what our practice is about.
Okay.
Getting along with people and mm-hmm. developing the good qualities to become a Buddha.
Yeah. Okay. And what about when it says if this benefit is not accomplished, it will be difficult to gain this opportunity in the future?
Well, chances don't always come around. If you miss the boat, you miss the boat.
Exactly. And there's an example that's often cited to illustrate this idea, which is that a whole bunch of merchants get in a boat and they go to an island and they find this mythical island that's full of jewels and they go, oh, that's pretty. And then they turn around and they go back. They don't take any of the jewels with them. You know, they've missed that opportunity. That's the example. And so if you come into a human rebirth, especially a precious human rebirth, and you don't do spiritual development, you're worse than the merchants that left all the jewels on the island.
Well, I've heard that of the trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of sentient beings out there, human beings are the smallest of the group.
You left off for one trillion.
Oh, yeah, but anyways, yeah, the human beings are of the smallest.
Yeah, stay tuned. We're heading really soon to that example right here. Okay. To elaborate on this, reflect on. So here's your reflection part. You're listening, analyzing, or reflecting. Reflect on, one, the difficulty of obtaining the human body endowed with the prerequisites. So it's not just any human body, as we will see. And two, the great benefit of this body which has been obtained. And three, the fact that the prerequisites obtained will not last long. Shanti Deva says it only lasts as long as a flash of lightning in the dark, mm-hmm. relatively speaking. Okay. So that's the introduction. And now we get into the details about all these topics, the difficulty of obtaining this human body endowed with the prerequisites. Who would like to read?
I'll read. Under this, there are reflections on A, the difficulty of obtaining a human body from the viewpoint of cause, B, the difficulty of obtaining it from the viewpoint of number, and C, the difficulty of obtaining it from the viewpoint of nature. The difficulty of obtaining a human body from the viewpoint of cause. This is mentioned in the
That's Shanti Deva.
Shanti Deva. Not having performed virtues, but having accumulated sins. Even the sounds of the words, happy realms, will not be heard for 100 million eons.
That's kind of heavy, isn't it? So he's emphasizing about, as long as you're here, do virtue. Otherwise, forget it for a long time. Okay.
To obtain the human body endowed with the prerequisites needed to practice the holy religion, one must have the cause, which is the performance of pure virtue. If one does not perform virtue but accumulate sins, it would be difficult to hear the words happy state for many eons, let alone to obtain the prerequisites. Therefore, since practitioners of perfectly pure virtue, which is the cause of the prerequisites, are rare, attainment of the prerequisites, which are the result, is also rare. One must also guard pure morality, that virtue which is the cause of the prerequisites. One will not be able to gain a body in the higher realms just by little giving and the like, as it was said in the...
That's Madhyamaka Avatara by Chandrakirti.
Even though one be endowed with much property due to previous giving, if one's leg of morality be broken, one will fall into the lower realms.
Okay, so what do you think that quote by Chandrakirti means? Even though one be endowed with much property due to previous giving, if one's leg of morality be broken, one will fall into the lower realms. Mm-hmm. Can somebody put that in plain English?
And in modern context, if you're born into royalty, for example, as Prince Andrew was, but you behave badly, as he did, his chances of coming back into such a privileged state as he has had are very thin.
Okay. What does this previous giving refer to?
Generosity.
Yeah, generosity. One of the six perfections. We haven't talked about that, but it's one of the six Mahayana practices.
So if you're not generous with what you've been endowed with in this life, then if you don't continue to be generous and grow that generosity, then you create a lot of trouble for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the generosity has to be correctly motivated, mm-hmm. too.
Right,
genuine.
It isn't just giving.
Right, which is growing that trait.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's one last sentence there, Nicole. You want to finish that? Therefore,
since guarding perfectly pure morality is rare, the attainment of a body in a higher world is even rarer.
Okay, so that's A, the cause of it. And now we go to difficulty of obtaining human body from the viewpoint of number, which, Lorna, you were talking about this, right? Do you want to read this?
Yeah, I did it too. Sure. One might wonder, since there are many human beings, how is it that the attainment of such prerequisites is so rare? This thought shows a lack of good examination by precise analysis, for in general there are seen to be more beings in the bardo who fail to obtain bodies than those who obtain bodies in the realms of beings.
Okay, let me just interrupt you right there, because this is a long paragraph. I want to take it apart a little bit. So, first of all, what is in this context, what does the bardo refer to?
In between state, between rebirths.
Yeah, between death and the next rebirth. There's lots of bardos, but in this context, that's what they're referring to. So what does it mean when it says there are seen to be more beings in the bardo who fail to obtain bodies than those who obtain bodies?
There aren't enough bodies to go around.
Sorry?
There aren't enough mothers.
Yeah, in other words, the conditions aren't there. So these bardo beings are... Lama talked about this a couple weeks ago. This room is full of them, and they're mm-hmm. looking for a womb.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we put something in that bell, cup bell, whatever it is, so that's a sign to them not to try to go in there.
And
sounds kind
you
of...
don't let your water bowls be up,
yeah.
Face up with nothing in them.
So there's lots and lots of beings in the bardo looking for rebirth, but not finding it because of the conditions, mm-hmm. right? And there's other, I mean, we could go on in that topic, but we won't now. So that's what that refers to. Okay, would you like to keep reading there, please?
Sure. The proof is that if one keeps an animal's corpse for several days in the summertime, it becomes fully infested by maggots. Likewise, however many dead corpses one keeps, 2, 3, or whatever, all will become filled with maggots. If there are infinite bardo beings due to be born only as worms, then what to say of other kinds of beings? The teachings from the Flawless Sutras, which say they must dwell in the bardo for a long time, are obviously quite correct. As long as the conditions that produce a body that do not coincide, a body is not seen to arise. Even in the obtaining of a body, the bodies of lower realms are many, but those of higher realms are few.
Okay, so this might be a little bit confusing to some people because it says that beings dwell in the bardo for a long time, but then other people might have heard, well, it's 49 days, mm-hmm. right? So is that a contradiction?
Seems like it, but I guess...
How do we resolve it?
Well, first of all, what's the definition of a day?
Right. It's all relative.
It's all relative.
Uh-huh. Time is relative, right? Okay. 49 days is just kind of a general number that's used so that when people have a loved one that passed away, they do ceremonies for 49 days. And it's actually 7 times 7.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't apply to everybody, as we just read. And as we saw, some beings are in there for a long, long time. And I've actually had teachings that say that there are some beings that never escape the bardo. If they don't have a lot of positive karma and they don't have a lot of negative karma, they don't really have the karmic impulse to go anywhere and they just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
in the bardo, can you collect karma, or do you need a body to do that?
I don't think you collect karma in the bardo, because you don't have a body, for one thing. You have a kind of mental body.
Does that mental body, can it do benefit? Can I ask another question?
There's no form in the bardo.
They're confused, and generally it's a suffering place.
Can I ask another question? In the culture, which I'm not... Okay, so in the culture that I belong to, in quotation marks, because I don't really belong to anything, really, in my opinion, but in Colombia, there's, like, you pray to something you call almas benditas, which is just, like, blessed souls, mm-hmm. but everybody knows that it's, like, between the state of, like, being born and dead. But if you ever need help with anything, it's part of the culture that you pray to these beings, and they help you out with whatever, but there is an exchange, and that is you have to light a candle for them, like, in their, because they're lost. They're lost, and they're in their darkness, so it's like an exchange. So you help me up with this, and I will give you a light. So then the question is, like, can they collect a good karma, or, like, how does that work? I don't understand. Like, can you benefit people even though you don't have a form? I mean, that's irrelevant to this, but I don't know. I'm just curious.
This is my opinion. I would say a spiritually advanced person could help beings anywhere they are, and there are beings that go to the bardo or to the hell realms and sort of fish people out, so to speak. So it is possible if you're spiritually advanced. But I would say that the average being goes to the bardo, they don't have that capability. They are lost, pretty much lost.
May I give an example from my own experience? Just one example. I rented a house so I could bring my father down from up island. And I noticed an elderly gentleman. I would go up and down the stairs to the laundry. And one day, he spoke to me. He said, Miss, how do I get out of here? And I said, you don't know how. No, he said. And you can hear me. I said, yes. How do I get out of here? He said, well, make your own heaven. We all have a heaven. Go to it. Imagine the most beautiful place you ever. You never get back.
Oh my God, that is so fascinating.
But he was stuck.
Right. Wow, isn't that amazing?
I think we could talk about this for a long time, and I'm not sure that we would answer, but those are some ideas anyway.
Thank you.
Okay, so there's a quotation from the Vinayagama, which I don't have the English translation for, I'm sorry. It continues on page 58.
Sure. Like the dust of the great earth are those gaining a body from higher realms to the lower realms. Like the dust on a fingernail are those gaining a body from the lower realms to the higher realms. Like the dust on a fingernail are those gaining a body from the higher realms to the higher realms. Like the dust of the great earth are those gaining a body from lower realms to lower realms. Thus the hell beings are like the great earth's dust. The hungry ghosts are like a snowstorm. And the animals are like the dregs of fresh wine.
So in other words, it's easier to go down than it is to go and have a precious human rebirth, right?
Hence, in contrast to the numbers of other beings, human beings seem to be just barely existing. Even if one considers only the animals that are scattered about in the higher realms, one sees boundless tiny creatures on the slope of a single mountain in the summer season. Among them, even the members of a single species, such as ants, are seen to be inconceivable in number. To illustrate this point through an example that it was said in the Shantideva, the Lord therefore said that it is difficult to obtain a human body as it is for a tortoise's neck to enter a hole in a yolk floating in the great wide ocean. It may be asked, did the Buddha state this? In the sutra it says that, suppose this world were one great ocean in which dwells a blind, long-lived tortoise who who surfaces once every 100 years. Upon that ocean is a yoke with a single opening, which is driven from east to west by the western wind, and west to east by the eastern wind, and so on. He spoke on at great length. So, monks, there will come a time when the outstretched neck of a blind tortoise enters the hole of that yoke. But I tell you, monks, human life is even more difficult to obtain than that. This means that, like the vast expanse of the oceans, birthplaces of other beings are vast and multitudinous. Just as the yoke has only a single opening, human birth is small in extent and few in number. Just as the tortoise rises up once every 100 years, so it is so rare to accumulate the karma that results in human birth. Just as the tortoise is blind, so one's accumulated karma is feeble. Just as the yoke is tossed about in every direction by the wind, so there are many adverse forces obstructing the coincidence of conditions needed for human birth. As it was said in the...
A letter to a friend.
More difficult that the placing of a tortoise's neck in the aperture of a wooden yoke in the same ocean is the achievement of human birth from the state of animals. O King, make this human life fruitful by practicing the holy religion.
Okay. I think that might be a typo there. I think it maybe could be more difficult than.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, it's difficult. Okay.
Hence the precious human reason.
Yeah. Okay, so that's difficulty according to number. And then we go to difficulty according to the viewpoint of nature. Who would like to read that?
It may be asked, what is that body endowed with the prerequisites? It is a body endowed completely with 18 factors, the 8 states of leisure and 10 obtainments. The 8 states of leisure are to be free, and of the 8 states where there is no leisure, to practice religion. The 8 restless states are 1, hell beings, 2, hungry ghosts, 3, animals, 4, long-lived gods, 5, barbarians, 6, with those with wrong views, 7, where the Buddha does not arise, and 8, fools. Of these 8, 4 are included in non-human states and 4 are included in human states. Of the first type, the hell beings are affected by intense suffering. The hungry ghosts are mentally inflamed by nature. The animals are utterly ignorant and their nature is shameless and immodest. The state of long-lived gods produces the condition for wrong views and pride. Barbarians practice erroneous acceptance and rejection, such as taking their mother for a bride, and have difficulty in meeting a holy person. Holders of wrong views do not believe virtues to be the cause of higher realms and of liberation, and accept the precious jewels and the law of cause and effect, doctrine of karma, not to be the truth. Men who are born in a world barren of Buddhas do not possess the holy religion which is to be practiced, and fools have defective organs of speech and are stupid. All of these do not know how to discriminate between what is to be accepted and what is to be rejected, and thus remain outside the pale of holy religious conventions. Hence, a body which is the basis of leisure is extremely difficult to obtain for most of the 6 realms where beings are in restless states. The 10 obtainments consist of 5 that are acquired by oneself and 5 that are acquired through others. The first 5 self-obtainments are 1. To be born as a human being, 2. To be born in a central land, 3. To have sound organs, 4. To have the faith in the holy Dharma, and 5. Not to have committed heinous actions.
Okay, so thank you. A central land we're going to hear about later. Not to have committed heinous actions. What does that refer to?
Killing. Actions like murder.
There's the 5 heinous crimes.
Especially killing a teacher or a mother or father.
Okay, killing your mother, killing your father. That's 2 of the 5.
Buddha.
Drawing blood from a Buddha, because a Buddha cannot die. They're not subject to death, so you can't kill them. But if you harm them and draw blood, that's one of them. Father, mother, Buddha.
Someone said teacher. Does that count? Like a Dharma teacher? Does that count?
It counts, but it's not on this list.
Oh, I see.
Okay, that's your homework to go look that up and come back next week and tell us. Okay. They're called the five heinous actions or the five heinous crimes. And what happens if you commit one of those? They're called the five sins of immediate retribution. That'll give you a hint.
You go to hell?
You're on your way down.
You go down? How fast?
Immediately.
Do you go to Bardo?
No.
No, you skip the Bardo. It's like immediate down. Yeah. Causing a schism is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So find the other one and then tell us next week.
Schism?
A division in the Sangha in the community. Those are the five heinous crimes. Let's keep reading, please.
Okay, 1 second. Where were we? Oh, yeah, okay. And it's already been explained how rare it is to be born as a human. It is also rare to be born in a central country. According to Arya Asanga, a region where one of the four assemblies or groups of monks, nuns, laymen, and lay women dwell is a central country, and a country where they do not dwell is called a barbaric land. The places where these four groups of people do not exist are similar to the sky. Where they do exist is like a cart's wheel only. For all one's organs to be sound is rare as well, as it was said in the Ganda view.
Yeah, I'm not sure the translation of that.
It is rare to be free from defects of organ. Hearing the Buddhist doctrine is also rare.
Okay, so where it says the four assemblies, monks, nuns, laymen, and lay women, just to specify, the laymen and lay women are those who have taken lay vows of some sort or another. It's not just anybody. Okay, but that's the definition of a central country, according to our friend Asanga. It's also rare to have faith in the objects of refuge, for only 1 in 100 is seen to acquire sincere faith in the well-spoken moral conduct teachings of the Holy Dharma.
Objects of worship.
I'm not even sure 1 in 100, personally, but anyway. It's also rare not to have committed the heinous crimes, which consist of either committing the five limitless crimes oneself, or asking others to do so, or rejoicing in the commission of these five limitless sins by others, which seems to be the most common of the three. So it isn't just that I killed my parents, that I hired a hitman to do it, or somebody else killed their parents and I went, oh, that's really good, and I rejoice in it. That's equally karmically disastrous. The five obtainments. By the way, those are often called endowments. You might see that written. Or even ornaments. Now, the five obtainments that are acquired through others are the advent of a Buddha. 2, he taught the doctrine. 3, the teaching has remained. 4, there are followers of the teaching. And 5, sincere compassion for others. Would somebody else like to continue reading?
Sure. The advent of a Buddha into the world is extremely rare. As it was said in a sutra, seldom does a Buddha appear in the world, and this human body is extremely hard to obtain. Alas, in such a world, faith and listening to the doctrine are also extremely rare. Generally, an eon in which a Buddha comes is called a light eon, and one in which he does not come is called a dark eon. The present eon is called a good eon because 1,000 Buddhas will come, and this is followed by 60 dark eons. Following that, a single light eon called establishment of qualities will occur. Then after 10,000 dark eons, a single light eon called greatly pleasant will occur. Then after 300 dark eons, a light eon called like a great star will occur. Therefore, during the 10,360 dark eons, only 4 light eons will occur. Since it is taught that the Buddhas do not appear in the light eons during which beings' lifespan increases, most of that time also passes without Buddhas appearing. As it was said in the Bodhicaryavatara, if the arising of a Tathagata, faith, a human body, and the habit of performing virtue are so rare, then could I find such an opportunity again?
Okay, so these numbers are kind of mind-boggling, but it's a long time, and it's really rare. And by the way, this cycle that was listed here of the 10,360, that repeats. So when those are finished, then it starts over and you go through the whole cycle again. But as you can see by the numbers, it's just really, really, really rare that not only does the Buddha appear, but if there are no students with the karma to receive the teachings, they don't teach. If you don't ask for the teaching and create the conditions, if you don't build the pond, the swans don't land. So the Buddha might even appear, but if there's no students with enough karma, they don't teach, because that's the only reason they teach, is for their benefit. But if there's no reception, if the student can't receive it, then they're not going to teach, because they only act spontaneously. So you have to have the Buddha appear, you have to have the students appear to receive it, the teachings have to remain, you have to have somebody that can practice the teachings and teach you and explain them, and there's all these conditions. This is leaving aside all the stuff about the numbers part that we just did. This is just the conditions to happen. And not only that, in the current time period that we're in, it's said that there's 1,000 Buddhas will appear. The historical Buddha, Shakyamuni, what number was he?
Fourth.
He was the fourth, yeah. But of those 1,000, okay, you have the foundation path, you have the sutra path, and you have the diamond path of Vajrayana. Only Shakyamuni Buddha taught Vajrayana. The other 999 don't teach that. So it's even rarer with what we've got here today, that we have this amazing path. We have masters to teach us. We have texts to study. We have leisure to practice. You can't even calculate how rare that is. It's just beyond comprehension how rare it is. And that's where we are right now in this room right now. Okay. So, let's keep reading here.
That the Buddha teaches the doctrine is also rare. It is said that the enlightened ones do not teach religion if there are no disciples who are worthy vessels for the teaching. Also, our own teacher, having attained enlightenment, spoke thus, I have discovered nectar-like doctrine which is serene, free from the conceptualization, clear light, and uncompounded. Though it be taught, none will understand it. So without speaking, I should dwell in the forest. Then it is explained in scripture. While dwelling thus, disinclined, it was necessary for the god Brahma to offer him 1,000-spoked wheel of gold and request him to turn the wheel of the Dharma.
Okay, so this is one of the famous stories in Buddha's life of the various activities that he did. He attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, but then he went, wow, this is really amazing. Nobody's going to understand this. And he didn't teach. I believe it was for 7 weeks. Is that right, Karen?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And so he was happy, of course, but he wasn't teaching because he just thought, nobody's going to get this. And then Brahma came along and offered him the golden wheel, and that's where you've probably heard the phrase, turning the wheel of Dharma. He said, okay, I'll teach. And this also illustrates that you have to ask. You have to make the request. If you don't ask, they don't teach. So this story, it symbolizes, but also teaches us this process of asking for the teachings, you know, and showing interest. And then the teacher will teach you, but otherwise, they won't. You have to indicate that you're ready. And if the students aren't ready, there's no teaching. Would somebody else like to read?
Can I get a glass of water? I'll read. It is also rare for the teaching to remain upon the exhaustion of each preceding Buddhist teaching in this good eon, there will be no teaching until the next Buddha appears. It is rare for others to follow the teaching. Most people follow other doctrines or are disinclined towards the teaching of Buddha. Even most who claim to be the followers of the teaching, imagining the scriptures, tantras, and their unerring commentaries are merely words of conceptualization, do not even seek to listen with their ears. They follow after the works of fools who write whatever comes to mind, being ignorant of the scripture's true meaning. Many practice this kind of listening, contemplation, and meditation, while others with substanceless claims of knowing the scriptures are seen to chase after such empty teachings, just as the hare ran away after hearing the sound shall.
Yeah, so that refers to a story, and if you want to read the story, you can go back into the footnotes and read the story. We won't go into it now.
It is rare to have sincere compassion for others. Those people who seek profit through giving, which is wrong livelihood, are repaid by many people. Rare is the giving of alms to renounced persons who dislike crowds and households and who solely rely on alms, spend their time in study and meditation, as it was said in the...
Yeah, I don't have the English for that.
Right livelihood is also difficult to obtain. Rare, too, are those who diligently practice religion in accord with the teaching.
So there's all these conditions where people are almost there, but not really. Most people don't follow Buddhism right off the top. And the ones that do, some of them kind of follow, kind of don't. Some of them follow teachers that aren't totally authentic. Some of them do livelihood, which isn't totally moral. You know, there's all these beings that are almost qualified as having precious human rebirth, but don't quite make it. Yeah. It's kind of sad, really, but it's true. I mean, all you have to do is look around. You'll see that. Okay, so what does Sakyapandita say?
As the master of Dharma, Sakyapandita also said, most who are diligent in their vows receive little honor. Those who are honored having little diligence in vows. Few are the donors who have faith in the doctrine. While the faithful offer to inferior recipients, and those offerings are acquired from wrong livelihood. If practitioners do not accept offerings that have been acquired through wrong livelihood, they're honored less. Therefore, one should know the full attainment of all the 18 prerequisites based upon a single body is as rare as a star in the daytime.
Yeah. So that's that section on how difficult it is to have the precious human rebirth. But if you do get it, there's a lot of benefit. And now we're going to find out about the benefits. Okay, who wants to read about the benefits?
The great benefit of this body which has been obtained. One may think, though due to many reasons, it is difficult to obtain this body endowed with the prerequisite, what is the benefit of obtaining it? If one obtains this body, it is even more beneficial than obtaining a wish-fulfilling gem.
So what is a wish-fulfilling gem? We hear this sometimes.
Like a genie lamp. I'm kidding. Okay.
That's our equivalent. That's okay. The Western equivalent is the genie lamp. Except the genie lamp only has how many?
Three.
And how many does the wish-fulfilling jewel have?
Infinite number.
Infinite.
Wow.
Except it cannot give you enlightenment.
Oh.
It can only give you, like, material world type stuff. But you can't say, oh, this sounds good, let's get enlightened. No, it doesn't work that way. You still have to do the work. But you'll see this reference quite a bit, the wish-fulfilling gem. Or there's also the wish-fulfilling tree, too. Mm-hmm. These mythical trees. I haven't seen any around here, but anyway.
If one makes requests to a wish-fulfilling gem, only prosperity for this life will occur. But through relying upon this body endowed with the prerequisites, if one practices the Dharma, what need to speak of merely good fortune for this life only? One will be able to achieve higher realms in the next life, the liberation of the lesser vehicle, and even the incomparable enlightenment. As it was said in...
That's the letter for training by Nagarjuna.
If one obtains human life, one can reach the further shore of the ocean of birth and...
Soul
virtue?
Yeah.
The sea of excellent enlightenment. Having obtained human life, which is of greater value than wishing gem, who would make it fruitless?
Yeah, this is like what we said before, the merchants that go to the island and don't bring home any jewels. You've gotten here and you're going to waste it, really? Okay.
And again, as it was said in the Bodhicharya Tara, having obtained this, one must accomplish the purpose of people.
I like that. It sounds very, random, but it's nice.
In the original Sanskrit, the word people is called Purusha, which means power or ability. The body endowed with the prerequisites of an inferior person has the ability or power to achieve the realm of gods or men. That of a mediocre person has ability or power to achieve liberation. And that of a superior person has the ability or power to achieve omniscience. It may be asked, but haven't the bodies of other beings also such abilities? They do not. Generally, the human body has great power and efficacy in performing either virtue or sin. And among them, i.e. humans, those of this world of Jambuvida, are strongest because they belong to karma, bhumika. Among them also, those with bodies endowed with the prerequisites are the most powerful.
Excuse me for interrupting. Karma Bhumika means you can have the result in this life. So theoretically, you could attain enlightenment in this lifetime. That's what that referring to. Go ahead.
As it was said in Letter to a Friend.
Letter for Training.
Whatever path that is obtained by strong-minded humans who set about leading living beings by relying on the Sugata's path is not obtained by gods and nagas, nor by yakshas, gandharvas, vijadaras, non-humans, and mahuragas, serpentine creatures.
Yeah, these are all the various kinds of creatures that exist. We've talked about some of these, but it's just a list of the various, some of them. Mm-hmm.
The human body endowed with the prerequisites is especially suited, more than any other body of the six realms of beings, to serve as the basis for practicing the holy dharma. Therefore, if one does not practice purely the holy dharma, when one has attained it, there is no certainty that the jewel of a human body endowed with the prerequisites, which is hard to gain and of great benefit, will later be gained again and again.
Why do you think that's so? Why is our realm so good for practice? Our rebirth.
Well, the body itself is a very special kind of temple.
Uh-huh. Okay. What about how much suffering we have?
Not too much. Not too little.
Yeah, it's Goldilocks, isn't it? We don't have the suffering of the hell realms, which is just totally overwhelming. But we're not in the God realms, the worldly God realms, which is they're just partying. They're not interested in practice. But we have some suffering, but we also have some leisure and opportunity and so on that we've been talking about to practice. And so we're just right. And in addition, as you said, the body itself, we won't go into that now, but the body itself has certain characteristics which allow us, for example, to sit in the lotus posture and meditate. Sounds obvious, but it has to do with your internal energy and what you can do with your mind and all that stuff. So it's really the best place to be, even though we don't realize it necessarily. Okay. I lost track where we are.
I think
as
it's here.
Said.
What page are we 64. On here?
64.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Before the...
Depending
the,
upon
yeah.
the boat.
Depending, Shanti Deva, what does he say? Depending on the boat?
Depending upon the boat of the human body, one crosses the great river of suffering. This boat is hard to gain later. So fool, there is no time for sleeping.
So fool, there's no time for sleeping. Wake up. Yeah, lethargy is one of our problems. Okay. You want to keep going?
Sure. One may think, even though I do not engage in pure religious practice in this present body, still, I shall obtain a human body again by merely refraining from collecting sins. And at that time, I shall practice religion. But even if one does not commit great sins now, there is still no certainty that throughout beginningless lifetimes one has not collected karma that will definitely lead to the experience of hells in one's next life. How then can one be confident of being reborn into the higher realms?
Yeah, that's the kicker. We don't know what we did 10 million lifetimes ago that hasn't ripened yet. And you can't just say, well, if I'm a good boy today, I'll get another human rebirth and then I'll practice because actually I'm kind of busy and I don't feel like it. Right?
Taking the situation for granted fully.
Now, there's examples of, you know, like biologists find seeds, right, that have been laying dormant for thousands of years. And the conditions just aren't right, and then they put the conditions to them, and all of a sudden they germinate. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, the famous wheat from the pyramids. Mm-hmm. That's like 5,000 years old or something, mm-hmm. and they planted it, and you have wheat.
And got the king.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Somebody else want to read?
Mm-hmm. Sure, I will.
Mm-hmm.
If one has to dwell in the unceasing hell, even though the sin is committed in a second, so by committing sins from beginningless time, what need to say that one will go to happy states?
Yeah, that's a pretty dramatic statement if you think about it. You know, how long does it take to fire the gun and kill somebody and then you go to hell for it? And we read about how long hell lasts, if you'll remember. Mm-hmm. And rebirths are beginningless, so who knows what you did? It's
what's the karma you acquire when you're in hell?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I think that one's worth meditating on. That's Shanti Deva quote. Okay.
One must practice dharma in accord with the words of the victorious one, not mere form and vocal religious practice, which are directed for the desire of this life. One cannot obtain a human body, let alone a body endowed with the prerequisites, by just the pretense of a religious practice. If it is not obtained, one will constantly experience only suffering because the bodies of other beings, of the other realms of existence, are not able to perform virtuous deeds. As it was said in the Shantideva, since my character is like this, I will not be able to obtain a human body. If I fail to obtain a human body, only sins and not virtue will ensue. Also, it was said in another scripture, it is hard to obtain the prerequisites again. The advent of a Buddha is rare to obtain, and the river of the afflictions are difficult to abandon. Alas, the succession of sufferings. In brief, having won this difficult to obtain human body, endowed with the prerequisites, and having met the doctrine of the Enlightened One, which is hard to meet if one does not make fruitful these endowments, when one has a chance to practice the profound essence of the doctrine, then it is like returning empty-handed from an island of jewels, and there is no greater self-deception than this. As it was said in Shantideva, having obtained endowments like this, if I do not become habituated to virtue, then there is no greater deception than this, and there is no greater foolishness than this.
Yeah. That's the teaching, and now we go into the contemplation part of the lesson, or the reflection part of it. Would somebody like to read that part?
Reflect upon the meaning of this as follows. Alas, from beginningless time until now, from one birth to another rebirth, I have been distressed by many sufferings against my wish. If even now I'm not able to cross over the great ocean of worldly existence, but am tossed about by the four great floods of birth, old age, disease, and death, there will be no final release from the mouth of the sea serpent of the afflictions. Whatever may happen, I must be liberated from this great ocean of suffering of worldly existence. To cross this great ocean of worldly existence, I have heard that one must rely upon the boat of the prerequisites. Through many reasons, such as cause, number, nature, and the like, this body endowed with the prerequisites is difficult to obtain. Further, its obtainment is endowed with inconceivable benefit, like a wish-fulfilling gem. If such a body is acquired, I can easily attain liberation and omniscience. Hence, it's more valuable than the bodies of the other six types of beings. Here, at the present time, when I have found such a body which is called endowed with the prerequisites, I must achieve benefit for the future generations as best I can. I must get as far from the ocean of worldly existence as I can. I must step as far upon the starting point of the path of liberation as I can. If I do not make this body endowed with the prerequisites fruitful during this lifetime, there is no certainty that later I will regain even a human body. Therefore, I must make this endowment fruitful in every way. Thus, one should reflect from one's heart and pray that it will happen so.
Mm-hmm. So that is the section on the precious human rebirth and the benefits of it, at least some of the sections. And that's the contemplation, if you want to follow, so that it really sinks in and goes in deep and makes a difference in your life, because it's not enough to leave the medicine on the shelf. You have to take it down and eat it, take it. I would just like to hear if anybody is affected by this. Does this change your perspective in any way about where we are and what we're doing and how to make use of it?
Just enhances it for me. Doesn't change it. I get it.
Yeah, get it more.
I've heard I get it more. Like, yeah, even more so.
Yeah.
I just feel like, okay, so when I was younger, I obviously thought science was like the essence of life, but eventually I was disillusioned because I studied that for a while and then realized that it was like materialistic in nature. And then reading this, and it's like, oh, because I remember on the bus to school, I always think, like, there had to be cultures in the past that figured out what it meant to be human. Like, what is, like, why are we here? Like, there has to be, someone must have figured it out. And now, like, reading this, it's like, okay, that makes sense. I get it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It does make sense.
Yeah. Someone actually did figure it out, and I finally pumped, like, finally found the answer to that question.
Yeah. Because you have prepared yourself in previous lives to be here in this moment and to be able to hear it. There's a lot of people that would come and go, well, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You were ready, you're right. I mean, we all are here, right? Listening. Geshe used to say, Geshe Tashi Namo used to say, look how few we are.
Mm-hmm.
Look how few we are. In another text that we've done, Sakyapandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent, he talks a lot about this idea of some people, some beings are inclined towards compassion and some aren't. They have like a sort of a precondition. And then they meet the Dharma and boom, the light goes on and they go, yeah, this makes sense to me. But it doesn't for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's light goes on. Yeah, so flash of lightning in the dark, it's all the chance you get, really. I mean, because who knows what's next.
Well, so, I've even had friends who kind of have drifted away from me because I've taken on the Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you
it's just...
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because that's all you share about?
No,
because
I don't even...
No?
I mean, I might have mentioned that I'm studying Buddhism and that's it.
Really?
I don't see them again.
Wow. Yeah. I think I would have issue because, like, I like to share everything, like, for some reason.
Well, you know, and I used to be like that as well myself, but I realized with this that it's not something you just shout there because in the West we have very weird ideas about Buddhism from pop culture and stuff like that, and I know because I used to, I know what those, you know, what that's about, having lived long enough. And so I don't bother, but I just mentioned that, you know, during COVID, what have you been doing? I said, I've been studying Buddhism, and it's like, I never hear from them again.
So. Scared them away.
And yet other people will say, oh, that's interesting. Oh, well, what did you learn? You know, there's this kind of turning point.
I've yet to run into somebody like that.
Well, they do exist. You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I was talking to my dentist today, and he was asking me all kinds of questions.
My doctor.
But there's this sort of turning point that you can reach. And what is it, it kind of mentions it, but not explicitly, what is it that kind of gets you over the hump to take the step? In other words, when do you actually start on the path?
The realization of how essential it is to do it now.
And when you realize it, what do you do? What action do you take?
You seek it out.
Say it loud.
You take refuge.
You take refuge. Remember we talked about refuge a long time ago? That's the actual step to become, the way you go, I'm interested to, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
It's a formal, actual step that you take to become a Buddhist. It's refuge. Yeah?
And then you pray for long life so that you have the extension of this precious human life
right.
to be able to accomplish something.
Right. I must step as far upon the starting point of the path of liberation as I can. That's refuge.
Yeah.
That's refuge. Yeah? You might want to underline that one. Yeah.
Sorry, where is that?
It's like about two-thirds of the way down the last paragraph on 66.
Could you read it again, please?
I must step as far upon the starting point of the path of liberation as I can.
I see.
Thank you. It's a kind of obtuse reference, but I wanted to bring that out, that it's there's an actual step you do. There's an actual ceremony that
That's
you do.
Right.
It's sort of the Buddhist baptism, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other comments that people want to make before we close about this topic?
Well, the urgency of it, I think, is so very powerful. And in some ways, perhaps, the pandemic has helped us understand how precarious things really are.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the urgency has become even more poignant and clear.
Yeah. And that's going to be the next topic next week. The prerequisites obtained will not last long. This is it, folks. Now. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, let's do our dedication prayers here. Sonam Dei Tan Chari Pan Dokma Vili Donam Panje John to Sam Jokin Poche Marke Pagnam Kejurchi Keman Yam Parmel Paryam Gong Ne Gong to Bel Parsho Jam Pao Ji Tarkin Padam Kundu Sam Bode Dina Dini Jesu Dado Che Gewa Dita Tan Che Rab Tu Mo Tu Sun Shek Pi Gya Wa Tan Che Ki Gwa Gang Wa Cho Tu Nga Pa Gi Darshan Ge We Sa Wa Di Kun Kyan San Po Cho Chi Rab Tu Nyo War Gi Chak Sa Wa Dang Cho Ching Sha Pa Dang Ye Su Yi Rang
shushin so wai gewa jun ze dagin chi sapa tam che so pe jang chu chi.
By the Spirit,
may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate offering to my own.
I train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the supreme but victorious Buddhas of past, present, and future.
I together with all sentient beings,
dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood.
May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching,
be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you.